I mean, however long it needs to go. 30 minutes?
Well,
90 minutes?
Well, I was thinking more just a... because if you're going to tack this on at the end of Cultcast, right?
Yeah.
And your Cultcast episode's about an hour, I would imagine.
About.
Yeah.
Technically, it's 30 minutes.
Okay.
But it never goes less than 60. It's the longest 30-minute Apple conversation you'll hear all week long.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with the amazing Aaron Hughes. He's sitting right in front of me, and we're going to be talking about our PAX 2018 experience. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with PAX, it is a huge gaming convention, video games and board games. It was started in 2000, maybe?
Yeah,
it was,
I want to say like 2002 or so.
And it was started by these guys that had this comic called the Penny Arcade. And they started a Penny Arcade Expo, which was basically just a big video game convention. Why did we not think about this idea?
I know.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It grew to a massive size. And now what was PAX Prime, there was only one PAX. Now it's called PAX West. It takes place in Seattle. They have them all over the world. They have PAX East. They have PAX South now.
Mm-hmm. And Australia,
PAX,
too.
They have one in Australia mm-hmm. as well. Is there a PAX North?
I don't know if there is yet, but yeah, I mean, maybe like Alberta would love
eventually
one.
There's going to have to be. That might be our in.
Yes.
That might be our in. Aaron and I are always talking about our con ideas. We both want to get into the con business, and we can never think of what to do because all the best con ideas are literally all taken.
Yeah. Like there's horror cons, there is obviously video game, there's board games, comics, like you name it, right? There's conventions out there for everything. So, I mean, what do we do? There's podcast cons, right? There's Twitch, there's, you know, vlogs.
There's even TwitchCon.
Yeah.
Which would have been a great con to start if Amazon hadn't thought of it already and started a TwitchCon. We even went to a con a long time ago called ZombieCon.
Mm-hmm.
These guys were trying to get a zombie convention off the ground, and we went 2 years in a row. And it was
2010 and 2011, I believe.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And it was arguably one of the worst cons I think either of us have ever been to. It was actually pretty cool, but how many people can you get to be in the same room who are excited about zombies?
Yeah. Well, I think the problem is that like the room was gigantic. The convention was way big for the amount of people there. So it seemed smaller than what it probably was, right? I mean, that was the thing. And then the following year, it was in a much smaller location, and it felt a little bit bigger, but it was very cramped, and it felt a little not as good as like something else. But you know, with that said, PAX, you and I actually met at a PAX.
I was going to bring that up,
and that was in 2010.
Wow!
So we've known each other now for just over 8 years. And I mean, so we've been going to these things for 8 years now. We've been going to,
I guess,
to
we
PAX
haven't
for
missed.
8 years. Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. So for those of you who used to listen to my other podcasts with Roberto Hoyos, I met Aaron through Roberto at a PAX, and then Roberto stopped going, and we just kept going together.
Yeah, it's funny because Roberto's not really a gamer per se, right?
Yeah,
you know, like I think he had an Xbox, right? And he played like Mortal Kombat on there, but really nothing else.
Oddly, a very big Mortal Kombat fan.
Yeah. But like you and I, though, it was like we did that. We did ZombieCon. We did PAX in the following year, Emerald City. I mean, we did the anime convention too. Like you had
SakuraCon.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was terrible.
And that one was interesting.
Yeah.
To say
that
the
is
least.
Just interesting for sure. I love cons. And even though this year's PAX was probably not one of the best ones that I've been to, I came away from it thinking, I can't wait to go back. It's the capstone of my summer, and I love going to it. I love the energy of it. And so I want to caveat this conversation with, this is just a conversation between two video game fans. We are not video game journalists.
Nope.
And I think that's important to point out because when I hear video game journalists talk, they have a huge backlog of knowledge about video games. And funny enough, I played a ton of video games growing up, but then I hear guys like Greg Miller from Kind of Funny talk about video games. And he knows everything about the last 20 years of games. And he can tell you the developers' names.
Mm-hmm.
And he can talk about games in detail. That's not really us,
no.
I would say. You're probably not in that camp either.
I mean, I'm probably closer to that. Like, I could tell you some developers, some creators. Okay.
So I'm like the Alex Albrecht, and you're like the Jeff Cannata, or the Jeff Cannata.
Maybe. I mean, like, I guess, but I have Alex's hair,
But you look like Alex, so it's kind of throwing me off. So we thought, we've been wanting to do this for years. Every time we do PAX, I say to Aaron, we need to do a PAX wrap up where we just talk about all the stuff that we love and maybe some of the things that we didn't like, mm-hmm. since we have those conversations anyway. Oh, yeah. I don't know if we want to talk about those here.
Well, we can talk about a couple of them.
It's easy to get on a tangent and talk about all the things that we don't like because we've been going for so long. We've seen it change for so long. And PAX used to be owned by the Penny Arcade guys, and they sold it to this convention organization called ReedPop. And ReedPop has made it better in many ways, but they've also made it more corporate in some ways. And we can tell, because we've been going for so long, how things have changed for the better and for the worse. So let's just talk about, I was thinking like maybe like three things each, so we don't go too long. Things that we liked.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of overlapping too.
So. Yeah. Hopefully there will be. Do you want to start us off?
Yeah. So I think it was interesting. Some of the highlights for me were actually some of the indie games that we saw. Mm-hmm. We went to, they have a little section that has a lot of the indie games there. And there are some that you see and you're like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Or like, that's something I would never play. But there were a few that we saw and that we liked. There was one that we stopped in was, I want to say it was called like It's a Golf Game or It's Not a Golf Game, something along those lines.
I should have got my camera. I took a picture of it specifically so I could remember the name of it.
Yeah, like, and it's funny. I looked it up, and so it was they're doing a Kickstarter for it. It was $10 actually for the Kickstarter to get on Steam. So I was like, oh.
Is it not released?
No, so it doesn't come out until like 2019. And like I said, I'm butchering the name, so I apologize for that. But it was essentially a golf game, a mini golf game that had like portals or like spider balls, like anything that you could do. Like with a golf ball. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting because it was, the presentation was great. The graphics were, it was unique enough to make people look at it as opposed to some of the games where it's just 8-bit graphics. You know, it's like, hey, we're going to be 8-bit because people like nostalgia. Instead, this was something I was like, oh, this looks like fun gameplay. It looks like unique concept and unique art. This is a game I would buy like right away. Like I saw that. I was like, I would give you money right now for it. In fact, I mean, I saw them. I was like, okay, I will give you money.
But it's not on console.
Not yet. So it comes out on Steam in 2019.
Okay.
I would wholeheartedly, this comes out on the Switch, I'm getting it immediately. Like, I mean,
easily. Absolutely. Yeah. This would be a great Switch game. Playing it on PC, I'm going to pass on that because we were both watching it thinking, this looks like a great game. I would love to play this on the couch. Mm-hmm. And then they say it was Steam only. You're going to play this game with a mouse and a keyboard? I would never play that game with a mouse and a keyboard.
Yeah.
I would want to sit back on the couch.
Well, and if you have a controller, you know, potentially. Yeah. But anyway, I would say one of the highlights, though, was some of the indie games that they were showing there. That was one of them. There were a few others that I saw. And then even some that had come out recently. There's a game called Celeste, Hollow Knight. Shovel Knight is another one that is really great. That's actually on the Switch right now.
That game's been out forever.
And it's been out for a long time. But like just to kind of see them and the fact that they're showcased a little bit more shows that some of the cream is rising to the top. There's going to be indie games. And look, you can't play everything, right? There's only so many hours in the day. So if you can only play some AAA games and maybe an indie game here or there. But to see the ones that were really good, I like that. And so that was one of the highlights for me.
I feel like a lot of the indie games that stand out to me, that jump out to me, generally have like a unique art style. That's the kind of thing that you normally don't see with AAA games as much as something that is totally out of the box. And I love walking through that little indie section and seeing a game that just captures my eye that has a totally unique art style. And I was trying to take pictures of all the games that I thought that were interesting, and I left my camera inside. So unfortunately, I don't have any of those here. But that golf game, what was it called again?
I want to say it was like, this is not another golf game or something along those
lines. I'll post it in the show notes so people can check it out. But yeah, that was one of the ones that caught my eye too because it looked like it was actually really fun. I don't know if this is cliche, but one of my favorite things this year for sure was the entire Nintendo booth. And for many reasons, a couple of which I'll touch on here. First of all, they were showcasing Super Smash Brothers, which they had this huge mural. You saw it on the back of the Nintendo booth.
It was amazing.
It just makes you feel like a kid. Mm-hmm. It and actually, when I was in the booth, there was this kid playing Smash Brothers, and this kid was losing his mind. He was probably 7, 8. He was jumping up and down. He was screaming. He was having the time of his life. And I was just hanging back, watching him play that game, and it made me feel like a kid again, just watching him. Do you remember when you got your first Nintendo console, and you probably got it for like your birthday or Christmas or something, and you lost your mind when you were pulling it out of the box? Video games are so ubiquitous now, I doubt kids get to have that experience, but like when you and I were growing up, they were kind of just starting to become a thing, and getting your first video game console was a rite of passage. it was one of the coolest experiences of your adolescence. So I loved watching him play games, but I just was really, this is going to sound really mushy, but I was really proud of Nintendo for making a comeback as strongly as they have, because they had the Wii, which was great for like 2 or 3 years. It was all the rage. Then they did the Wii U, which was a total flop. It was so obscure. Virtually no one's ever played it. Virtually no one even knows what it is. Like, if you're not a Nintendo fan, you need to know.
Despite the fact both of us own one.
We both own one, yeah. And there are some great games on it.
Yeah, you know, honestly, Nintendo Land, like, right? Like, the Luigi's Mansion game was so much fun. Oh,
Luigi's Mansion,
yeah. The Mario Chase was a lot of fun. And we played that together with, you know, with multiple, like, a ton of people. And it is great. And then that's when it stops, right? You know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I totally get
all the first-party titles.
Yeah, but I totally get what you're saying. I mean, like, you know, with what they've done with the Switch, and obviously Smash is amazing.
Smash looked really good, and I'm not even really that big of a Smash fan. This will probably be like the second Smash game that I've ever played, because I never had a GameCube, and Smash was most popular on the GameCube, right? Yeah, so I never touched it on the GameCube, really, but it looked really good. And the Switch is probably one of the best consoles ever made. Nintendo now has one of the most exciting booths. They are doing something that no one else is doing. I mean, you have PlayStation, you have Xbox, and they have different games, but they're both just consoles, and they're not doing anything really that different from each other. And then there's the Nintendo Switch, which is this console that you can play on your TV, take it out with you and about. I just hope that they, and I was telling you this, I hope that they come out with like a pro version.
I do.
And
too.
I would spend upwards, maybe $500 would be my max for a Nintendo Switch Pro. Bigger, better screen, better battery life, maybe 1080p on the screen. I would buy that in an instant.
Well, even just one of the things I've thought that they could do, because I've seen this in computers, is the dock. You essentially sell like a $200 dock, and when you plug that in, it like supercharges the Switch, essentially.
Ooh.
So it does like 4K output, you know, that sort of thing. So you wouldn't have to necessarily buy a brand new Switch, just a new dock. And that'd be kind of cool. But I agree with you. The Switch, I think it's probably the best console right now. I hope Nintendo does something about their virtual console library, because to be able to play Super Nintendo games on there would be amazing. And I know that they're doing something with that.
And by that, you mean you can't play games from older Nintendo consoles on the Switch right now.
They're doing something. They have their online service coming out soon. But with that said, like Smash Ultimate, to be able to play a Smash Brothers game that has every character and almost every single stage from every other Smash Brothers, you're getting literally the ultimate version, right?
You know? I'm getting chills like, just thinking about it. Like, that mural was so amazing. Smart. And it was beautiful and had every character on there, just showcasing all the different characters you'd be able to play in that game. I am really looking forward to that game a lot. They were also showcasing, I think, Mario Party.
Yeah,
Mario Party games.
There's I think it's Super Mario Party is the name of it, and that comes out in October, early October. I don't know if they had the Pokemon game that comes out in November. Okay, I didn't happen to see it, but and I mean that was one of mine too. Was the Nintendo booth? I mean, you walk by, you see it, and you just see the line of people, and you see all the games that they have coming out. And like, I'm happy for Nintendo. The fact that they're doing as well as they are, because you know, Nintendo has always said that they do their own thing, whereas like Sony and Microsoft are like kind of neck and neck with what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Sony right now is currently in the lead. Obviously, Microsoft did really well last generation, and then Nintendo is over here in their own little area. They're like, oh, we do things for kind of kids and you know other people, and then the Switch comes out and it's like,
Nintendo's mainstream again.
Yeah. And like, I mean, and the games that like, you know, last year, this year, the games that are come out for are amazing. I mean, they are not just like AAA, they are tens across the board. You know, Zelda and Mario last year were just amazing. They were best games easily.
The Zelda on the Switch, it's one of the best games I've ever played in my entire gaming history. There are a few games that have played as magically as that game did. From the moment I got into it, I was completely captivated. And then I didn't even realize what's the first land that you're in, the first map that you're the part of the map that you're in. What's it called? The first place that you start in.
I don't remember the name of of it, but
dang, I don't either. But I thought that was the entirety of the game. And then I left that with my hang glider and I was like, oh my gosh, this game is huge. Mm-hmm. I had no idea, because no one knew anything about that game. It just came out and it was this gem that no one had even heard about because Nintendo had kept it secret. And I was totally captivated by it. Anyway, tangent over about Zelda Breath of the Wild. What's your next pick?
Well, I was going to say it would be the Nintendo booth for sure. You know, that was something that was really cool. I like seeing the Capcom booth too. I definitely like Capcom. They had a really cool Resident Evil 2 little area set up. They were showing off Mega Man 11, which that one's also coming out in October. That should be a really fun game, really cool game. It's going to be on all the major consoles. But yeah, I mean, I would say like Nintendo and then followed up with the Capcom booth. And I mean, even Sony had a really good booth. I would say actually kind of a little disappointed with Microsoft. I didn't really see a whole lot from them. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that they have some stuff in
they
motion
right
now.
They had some new merch. They had some new Xbox jackets and stuff. You must have missed those.
But yeah, I mean, like I would say like Microsoft didn't have as much there, which is unfortunate because they are in the area where Sony isn't as much. They're more in California. Obviously, they do have first-party studios here. But, you know, I would say, yeah, Microsoft should have had a little bit more, I feel.
That was one of the surprising things about the show is thinking about this after we left. There was not really a single AAA title that stole the show. And there are some notable games that were missing. No Fallout 76 presence at all.
Well, I think I saw it off like by itself, but like there, like I think I did, like honestly,
I don't think they had a presence. You mean like a booth?
Yeah, I think like a small little area, because I saw something that said Fallout 1776 to 2016 or something along those lines. But yeah, I mean, like there, but either way, it was like very small, and it was we went through the entire expo hall. So I mean, if we didn't see it, it was like meh, must have been really tiny.
Yeah, I didn't see one, and that game comes out in November. Mm-hmm. So it's really strange that they didn't have a presence there, I thought. And then another big title that I think would have been cool to see at the show is Cyberpunk 2077. Mm-hmm. And that game looks incredible. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to play that game. But I was reading that they're not sure if it's even going to be released in 2019. Like CD Projekt Red is making the game, said they're hoping for 2019. So, holy... They announced that game really mega early. If they're not even sure it's going to come out in 2019, it kind of sounds like it's probably going to be 2020. So for them, it might make sense that they didn't have a booth because they probably literally have nothing to show at this point. Although they did just release, what, like 30 or 40 minutes of gameplay online. Did you see that?
I didn't see it. No, I saw the E3 stuff, which I thought was really great. And yeah, I mean, the game looks amazing. And it's funny that you mentioned like hoping for 2019, which means it's coming in 2020.
Probably, most likely.
Yeah, it's coming 2020. Exactly. PS5 and Xbox 720 or whatever they're going to call it, you know?
It's going to be the Xbox 2.
Well, like but that. Then there's the PlayStation 5, right? So it'll be the Xbox
2.
8, you know? I don't know.
I don't know if they're going to come out with a new Xbox now that they have the Xbox One X. I mean, that's like that's already like their next generation console, it seems like. It's already a super powerful console, so why would they need to come out with another faster one? Because it already smokes the PlayStation.
It does. Even the PlayStation 4 Pro, it does.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. So it kind of seems like just PlayStation needs to catch up. But from a marketing perspective, I guess they do kind of need to do something. They can't just say, oh, well, still buy the X. Mm-hmm. It's still more powerful, or it's just as good as the PlayStation 5. So I think my next pick would be, this is the year of Battle Royale. And Battle Royale has taken over video games and it's taken over PAX. There was this Fortnite mega presence at PAX. First of all, they're having a Fortnite tournament with a $1.5 million pot. And they have taken over part of the convention center. They have three stories of Fortnite paraphernalia. I'm going to probably go try to see it tomorrow, like I said, because I don't even know what's in there. I didn't even make it over there. PAX is huge, by the way. It used to just be one set of convention centers. Now it sprawls all of downtown Seattle, and there's probably 7 buildings.
Yeah,
maybe
probably.
Full of stuff. So we haven't even gotten to see all of it yet. But it's really cool. I like Battle Royale games, and I like how it's re-energized video games, and it's taken streaming to a whole nother level. Twitch would never have gotten as popular as it has without PUBG, without Fortnite. And to see all the young kids at PAX now that probably would not have come if it weren't for Fortnite, because that's what they're there for. They had this tent, this Fortnite tent, which was as big as an airplane hangar. It was massive. You didn't go inside it, did you?
No, I didn't go inside, but I saw it from the outside. I mean, you're saying a tent is almost an understatement. I mean, like, it really was. It was like a hangar.
It was a tent, but it could have held a jumbo jet. Yeah, like, it was the biggest tent I've ever seen in my entire life.
And the screen was gigantic, and they're giving out free food and drinks.
Dude, the burgers were great.
Were they?
And then I got to the middle of mine, and it was absolutely raw. I mean, I took one bite of it and I was like, whoa, this is a good burger. And then I kept going and I was like, ooh, I don't know if this is cooked. It just felt warm. And I looked down at it, pure raw meat. So I threw the rest away because I was like, I'm not going to get Montezuma's Revenge via my burger at the Fortnite mega tent. That's neither here nor there. They also had free drinks, which was great. But it was cool being in there. They had this giant screen, as Aaron mentioned, and the screen literally covered the side of a, I don't know, an 8-story building. Mm-hmm. It was massive. It was one of the biggest screens I've ever seen. And the interesting thing about the screen is it was perfectly viewable in daylight. It was mm-hmm. out in the sunlight, and you could still see it, which most screens, you know, can't be viewed in daylight. So that was interesting. I was just hanging out in there with, I don't even know how many people were in there, 1,000 people probably watching Fortnite. People were captivated. And, dude, esports are turning into a phenomenon. I was in there with these people, and we were all watching these players play Fortnite. They have all these different viewing systems now for Fortnite where they can back out and they can show you where everyone is on the field. They can go from person to person to person and show you what's going on with all these people. It's like a whole built-in technology. It's like watching an NFL game. They have all this technology built in to help facilitate the viewing experience. And Epic, the geniuses at Epic who are making money hand over fist, are building in all this technology to really bolster esports. And things would happen in the game and we would all react together. Like someone would get smoked or do something stupid. Like one guy was shooting grenades and he hit the wall and then he blew himself up and everyone just erupts. We're all like, oh, like the entire place completely erupted and we were all laughing. And it was a really cool communal experience. And that is something that has been missing from PAX, is stuff that you can do together with people. Because even though you're all there together, you're all kind of having your own individual experiences mm-hmm. at PAX. And now you have these huge sports that you can go watch together. Sports. People are going to laugh when I'm talking about it that way. It's true, though, man. What these guys, you watch Ninja play. He's one of the most popular Fortnite players. You watch him play, and then you go try to do what he does in Fortnite. He is an athlete. Like, he may only be using his mind and his wrists and his hands, but that guy does stuff that I cannot do. I've tried to do some of the things that he does, and the decisions that he makes on the fly are so creative and out of the box, are things that I would never even think to try to do. Not to mention, I don't have the dexterity to do. He is an athlete. A video game athlete, nonetheless, but an athlete. Anyway, I thought that was a really cool experience. That was certainly one of my favorite things this year.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the disappointments I had was in years past, we actually had bonded a little bit over playing some board games. Right. You know, a friend of ours, him and I, we played some games together. There was a new game, King's Forge, that we learned about mm-hmm. by playing it there. A few others as well. And that was something that was a little disappointing because we went to the board game mm-hmm. area and there was really no free play. There was a free play that was only available for like an hour. And they're like, oh yeah. And it's like, well, if I want to play a board game, typically it's going to take, you know, maybe an hour at least, you know, to mm-hmm. play that. And that was a little bit of a disappointment for me that they didn't cater a little bit more to learning a little bit more about the board games.
They kind of keep pushing it further and further into the bowels of the convention center. And they're like, oh, it's here. You just have to go into the deep, dark basements, get your flashlight, and you have to look for the rooms where they have board games.
Yeah, it was only tournaments. And it's like, you know, I mean, that's fine. You can have the tournaments. But if I want to learn how to play Magic, right? Like Roberto, he learned how to play Magic at PAX with us.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. So we actually went through and we were explaining how to play it because they had decks there for us to show off and everything. And that was really cool because he got to learn how to play Magic at PAX because we were showing that to him. And that's something that was a little bit of a disappointment for me.
They used to have games everywhere, like board games. Mm-hmm. So I should say again, PAX is board games and video games. And it used to be a little bit more equal. There used to be a lot of board games, a lot of video games, and now it's just mostly video games, especially now with all the Battle Royale stuff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the actual board game stuff keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And I'm not a huge, huge board game player, but I've always liked going to PAX and just sitting down at a table because there's always people there who are willing to teach you a new game and then learning a new game. In fact, I would say 80% of the games I know how to play, I learned how to play at PAX. And I learned about at PAX. Mm-hmm. Like the first time I ever played Munchkin was at PAX.
Yeah. And same here.
And that guy just sat there and he taught us all about it, which is always the best way to play, right? Because like, who wants to read the rules and figure out how to play it themselves? Like no one wants to do that. So it is sad that has kind of become smaller and smaller and smaller. And I even looked for it after you took off. I did a tour of the second floor, and they just keep pushing it out into these small remote rooms, and there's no central place to go and play games anymore. So yeah, that part is definitely sad.
Yeah, a little bit of a disappointment, but you know, I mean, regardless of that, you know, there still is a lot of great stuff that is going on there. And if you are into the tournament scene, I think that that's great for you. You know, if you really like to do Magic the Gathering tournaments, that's a great place to go.
Yeah.
And you can do that. But if you want to do just learn a little bit, like Munchkin, right? Mm-hmm. I completely forgot that that's where we played it at. But that's where we learned.
I didn't realize that was your first time either.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I won like a bookmark or something because I was such a natural at it. Did I win the first?
I think you did.
I think I did win. Yeah, and never again have I won that game. That was the first and the last time that I won. I was going to say something else that I thought was a bummer, but I can't remember what it was. Did I do my second pick already?
I did.
Do you have a second pick?
Well, I agreed with you on the Nintendo one. That was essentially mine.
And then the Battle Royale stuff.
Battle Royale.
Yeah. Okay. And it disappeared. Anyway, what's your third pick?
Let's see. Third pick. You know, I like a lot of the stuff that they show there, a lot of the unique artists and the designs that people have when they're selling items. You know, one of them that I would go to, they would sell minimalist polos, right? So they would sell a polo that has like a little Triforce on it. So you can wear this to work. And if somebody's really geeky, they'll be like, oh, I know what that is. But no one else will notice. They'll be like, oh, you just have a nice polo on and you're at work. And seeing different designs that people have where it's not just like, oh, this is Mega Man or this is Mario. It's a like cool design of Mega Man on this t-shirt where you're like, oh, I want to buy that. And that's one of the things I love about PAX is going around and seeing some of this stuff or seeing artwork that people do. At Comic-Con, you get a lot more of the artwork stuff that you can purchase, which is really great. But, you know, you still see a lot of it at PAX. And going around and seeing all that stuff in everyone's booth, I really love doing that.
I like seeing the artwork too. The energy of the place, too. I just like the energy. Just being at PAX with all the people, because there are probably 90,000 people that come, maybe 100,000. I mean, it keeps growing, but I'm sure they say it's about
100.
Okay, and they keep adding capacity to kind of, you know, make people not all be in the same place at the same time so they can keep adding and selling more tickets. And the energy of the place, I just feed off that. I go in there, there's a ton of creativity. There's all the cosplay, which is always one of my favorites because some of these people could be like professional costume designers. They're that talented. So you just walk around, you see all these amazing costumes and you just kind of feed off the energy. And there's people like lounging around, like on beanbags everywhere. They must have like thousands of beanbags just filling these convention centers. So people are just like lying around, just like lazing around doing nothing. It's kind of like being like an indoor Burning Man in a way. You know, there's like all this creativity. Unfortunately, there's not as many naked people.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. Actually, probably for better. Yeah, Red Bag's probably for better. And there's just a lot of creative energy and that energy that you get when you're around a ton of people all in the same place who are all enjoying the same experience. I really love that. And that might be like the number one thing about PAX that I love and why I always miss it when it's over. Where else can you go and have that many people in the same convention center? I mean, Comic-Con is popular. Seattle Comic-Con is popular, but it's not nearly as popular as PAX.
Tickets don't really sell out, you know. It's not the same. I totally agree. And I think one of the big things too is, you know, you think about growing up, right? And playing video games. Of course, you don't really have the internet at the time, so a lot of like my core group of friends I still have, we grew up playing video games together and some of them still play with me, which is great. You know, I mean, you obviously will play with us too. And it's awesome. Like we have this shared thing that we absolutely love. But a lot of times, you know, the group of friends, the core group of friends that, you know, IRL, right? It's like, you know, a small, like, you know, 5 to 10 people at most, right? Instead, you go to PAX, it's 100,000 people, you know, and a given day when we were there, there was probably like 40,000 people there, you know,
in the convention center
at that day, particular day, at that particular time. There's like 40,000 people that all love video games in some capacity, right? You know, whether it's Nintendo, Sony, PC, Xbox, you know, or, you know, TurboGrafx-16, they love video games and they love playing them. And when you can talk about, oh, did you play Breath of the Wild? And they can talk about that. And in that game in particular, because it had such different experiences that you could have, that makes it a big conversation piece, which is really cool. So you can talk about a game and have very different perspectives, even though you played the exact same game. And I think I totally agree with you. That type of energy, like, it gets you excited. It's
absolutely.
It's not just like, you know, like you're, oh, it's my this is my sports team. It's not that necessarily, because it's not just one sports team. It's 32, you know, it's 90, it's a million sports teams that you all love. And you may like different ones, but at the end of the day, you like that no matter what.
Yeah.
And so I agree.
Yeah, it's a really cool sense of camaraderie, just walking around, being around all those people who all enjoy the same types of experiences and games and stuff. By the way, Super Smash Brothers, they have a set piece, one of the combat areas, where it's at the top of one of those towers in Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, dude. It looked incredible. It was so beautiful. You're just fighting each other on that tower, and you have all of Hyrule like below and behind you. It looked beautiful. They had a lot of really good looking maps in that game. Are these maps new to this game? Or
there are some that are.
Okay, so that must be one of the new ones.
So I, from what I've seen,
this is a redo of a game that came out on.
No, it's not. So, so they've done essentially four Smash Brothers. This is the fifth one. You know, so you had 64, Melee, Brawl, Wii U / 3DS, which was essentially just one. And then you have Smash Brothers Ultimate. So Ultimate is having every character come back. Plus, they have new ones. So, like, the Inklings from Splatoon are in there, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
They have a Splatoon. It's the Moray Tower. So, they have
I that saw that one, too. Yeah,
and that is awesome. Like, that is so,
so nostalgic.
Cool. And yeah, it's funny because the game came out last year. Right?
I know, you know, but I stopped playing it, like, 3 months after it came out, you know, because it came out and then I moved on to other games because I have a huge backlog of games up there. Yeah, as you probably do. And most of them I've never touched. Some of them are still in the shrink wrap.
Doesn't that make you feel like, oh man, like if I was 16, if I was like 10, like I would be killing myself right now for that.
All right. You get like a whole summer off and you get to just do nothing. Like my neighbor's kids, one of his kids is 15 and like he literally does nothing all summer. And by nothing, I mean, he literally does nothing. He doesn't have a job. He doesn't do any sports. And I was talking to his parents and I'm like, what does he do? And they're like, nothing. He just does nothing. He just he literally just lays around all day. I was like, I envy that kid. I envy that kid. I remember being 15 and doing nothing all summer long. You get out of school and it's like you just do nothing. And then every once in a while you go out on like the weekend.
Yeah, but no, I hear. And yeah, I mean, backlog is unfortunate. But yeah, like Splatoon, though, in Smash Brothers Ultimate, like to have the Inklings in there, that's awesome. Like you have that in there. You have returning characters. You have third-party characters. They announced Simon and Richter Belmont are going to be in there from Castlevania.
Oh, I
so you can have the Castlevania folks. You can have Mega Man, you know, from Capcom, which a completely different series, Sonic and Pac-Man. And like all of these third party people are in there for Smash Brothers. And so it's like the ultimate party game. You can do it competitively, which a lot of people do. I've always done it more party. So, you know, you always have the items on the screen and have a lot of fun playing it. And it's great. Like it is a fun game and it can bring people together. And it's not competitive in the sense where you might get angry at when you're playing it, like, oh my God, like that guy killed me and now I'm like super frustrated. Like you might get like when we're playing like Call of Duty, right?
Oh,
you know, like,
dude.
You know, or one of those games where they kill you and you're just like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
But in this, it's like, you know, it's like, it's fun. You know, that's, I think, part of the appeal of Smash Brothers. And I've been playing it ever since the first one. I remember getting it on 64 and had a great time playing it. And obviously all the way up to, you know, where we're at now. So
it's so funny, man, because there's so many games I play that I really don't have fun playing because they just piss me off. And I think Call of Duty is a perfect example. I used to love that game. I still love that game. I had to stop because my blood pressure just couldn't take it anymore. The lag comp in that game is so bad. It's so damn bad. And I understand them building a game where you can play with people shooting at each other all over the United States. It must be incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. And how do you compensate for people's different connection times and ping times and connection speeds and so on and so forth. But when you're shooting at a guy and he doesn't hit him and then he just runs up and shoots you once and you die, that's frustrating, especially in a very competitive game because I get competitive when I play those games.
Well, and we played Black Ops just the other night too. I mean, which is full of cheaters now, unfortunately, and modders and hackers. But
it just reminded me exactly why I stopped playing.
But the thing is like that, right? Like you and I both, like it's this like frustration, whereas like Smash, it's fun. Like, and even if you played online, which I mean, you know, Wii U can't play online anymore. Wii U was like, it was very laggy. This should be a lot better because Nintendo is going to have like paid servers, you know.
Let's hope so.
But like, it's fun, you know, and you don't get as mad about it. It's like, oh, it's a fun game. I'm done. Move on to the next one.
I actually have fun playing Nintendo games.
Yeah, like even Splatoon. like Splatoon, playing that online is fun. Like you know, for the most part, if I lose, unless it's like a super frustrating loss, I'm like, it's, oh, that was fun. You know, that was cool. Like, oh, we lost that one, whatever, you know. But for the most part, when I play that game, I have fun.
Mario Kart, you know? Too.
Mario Kart, yeah.
Mario Kart is so delightful to play. everything about it is so whimsical. Nintendo is like the Disney of video game creators. When you play one of their games, like the music and everything, just makes you feel good. And their attention to detail is unparalleled. I was just playing, so I play my Super Nintendo Classic with my daughter. She always wants me to play games, which just warms the heart, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I was playing Zelda today, and she was watching. So I let her pick a game, and then I play. And right from the moment you turn on the console, it starts playing that cool music. It just makes you feel good. And then you pick one of the games, and the games are fun. You never get frustrated. You never want to like rage quit when you're playing a Nintendo mm-hmm. game. They're safe for kids, so I don't have to worry about someone's spine being ripped out. You know. Which I love, but you know, it scares the kids. And it's really cool sitting with my daughter. It's actually really cool sitting with my daughter and playing games. And the Super Nintendo Classic is full of classic games. Mm-hmm. So I'm playing games that I grew up with, and she's just sitting there watching. And some of these games I've never played. Like I was playing Yoshi's Island. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's called. Great game.
You know what's funny? I've never played it, but like I've always wanted to because I've heard like it's a lot of fun.
It's really fun. And the game mechanics, Nintendo is always extremely creative with game mechanics. So I've been kicking back, playing games with her, and the entire experience from start to finish. The console experience, the game experience, it's just all so whimsical and fun.
Yeah, and that, I mean, like you said, that's the thing about Nintendo, right? And to, you know, bring it back to Smash, that's a game where you can play that as, like, it's probably going to be rated T for teen, right? That's a game I can play in front of my son, who's 4 years old. I have no problem playing that in front of him because it's like, he knows Mario, he knows Link, you know, he knows some of the other characters. And it's just they're having fun with each other. You know, they're like hitting each other a little bit, but like they're wrestling or something, right?
And then no one dies. They just get knocked off.
They just get knocked off and they come back. Yeah. Right? So it's he can watch that and not have an issue. Like he's watched me play Splatoon. You know, he's like, can you play the paint game? Can you play the paint game? He loves it. You know, it's fun for him. And I think that's the thing about Nintendo and to see their booth this year. I mean, they probably stood out the most to me. I think Nintendo did. Sony was probably a close second, mm-hmm. I would say. But Nintendo's was just, you see it and you're like, wow, like this is really cool.
I literally wanted to play all the games there except for Pokemon because I hate to admit this. I know absolutely nothing about Pokemon. I don't even know what the characters are. I never played Pokemon. I don't understand how to play Pokemon, what the premise of the game is.
Oh, the premise is to catch them all.
Okay. Well, I never tried to catch them. I never tried to fight them. I know you could train them, make them fight each other, right? Which seems sadistic and gross to me. So well,
you want to try to be the very best. Yeah. Like no one ever was. Uh-huh. You know, you want to train them. That's your real test, you know, and to train them, that's your cause.
So, okay. Yeah. Well, I saw some guy playing Pokemon, and I was like, what the hell is going on in this game? It was the only game in that entire booth that I had absolutely no interest in whatsoever. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are really looking forward to that game, but I am not one of them.
I'm looking forward to it because it's just Gen 1. So they are like at Gen 7 or 8 now. Uh-huh. And the problem is they added like 100 Pokemon every year, and the Gen 1 was 151 Pokemon.
So how many Pokemon are there? 700, 800?
There's like 700, 800 Pokemon.
Dear Lord, help us.
And like people know all of them, right? Like, but there's a lot of people that are like, look, I played Gen 1 and it was fun, and then you lost me after that. You know, which is, you know, I mean, they lost me after that. Mm-hmm. So this one is going to be essentially a remake of the Game Boy version, which was Generation 1 Pokemon.
Oh.
So
that's kind of a cool kickback.
And then it ties in also with Pokemon Go, so you can, I guess, transfer some of the Pokemon over back and forth, which is kind of cool. I'm going to pick it up. I think it'll be interesting. I might not pick it up right away, though, because Smash Brothers comes out in very beginning of December, and mm-hmm. Pokemon comes out, I want to say it's at the end of November. Mm. So there's probably like a two-week window. I'm okay with not playing Pokemon. Like, I can wait and let that drop.
You can
in
buy
price.
That secondhand.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Especially since we're not going to be getting our discount on video games anymore sometime, probably in the new year.
Yeah.
Which is going to be very sad. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on PAX?
No. A lot of fun. We've been going, obviously, since 2010. I've been going since
it's our
together.
Last year together.
Well, maybe, I might come back next year for it. Who knows?
But, are you thinking like you might? Because you were when we left this year, you're like, I think I might be good.
Yeah, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
But like, you know, we've been going together since 2010. So I guess this would be year 9 then of us mm-hmm. going or our 9th time going. And so I've been going since 2009. So, I mean, it's fun to go. You know, there's something different every single year. Like I could point to different things that have happened every year at PAX. And it's all, you know, there's great things that have happened at each one. This one, probably not as many great things have happened in years past.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make it a bad one necessarily, you know?
I feel like PAX is going through a rebirth right now because for a while There was Cards Against Humanity, big presence there, which was always fun. There was a lot of Halo stuff going on there that was cool. And a lot of that big exhibit stuff seems to kind of have faded away. Mm-hmm. And this year, with the presence of Fortnite, with the presence of PUBG, I feel like, okay, we're headed back in a direction that's fun. And I feel like PAX is kind of finding a new way to interest people, a new presence, because for a couple of years, it has kind of started to feel a little derivative. And you go and you're like, there, all these games have been announced for months because of E3. And I don't want to wait in a 2-hour line to play a game that's going to be released in a month.
Or in the case of Spider-Man, 6 days, right, and there's a 2-hour wait to play the game.
Right. Yeah. So they're kind of suffering from their own success, because when we first started going, you could actually play a game. We played Gears of War 4. We played Borderlands, and the lines were maybe 30 minutes. And now it's like going to Disneyland on a Saturday. I mean, the lines are outrageous, and people are waiting 2 hours to play some of these games. And there's no way in hell I'm waiting 2 hours to play a game that comes out. I don't care if it's coming out in 6 months, unless it's Borderlands. I might do that for Borderlands.
For Borderlands 3, you would have done that.
Yeah. And the panels have been somewhat lacking, too.
Panels were. I was taking a look at that, and there was really only one, maximum two panels per day that were interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that, okay, it was just interesting to me, but if you are trying to get a lot of people in there, or you want to get a crowd to kind of get off the floor and go to these panels, you want to get something that's going to get people there. But when you're talking about something that's super niche, you're only going to get that niche audience there potentially, and the panels aren't necessarily what's pulling people in, you know? So, but if we see something that's like, oh, hey, this is about Nintendo and it's focused on some sort of Nintendo thing that you don't know, or breaking into the video game space.
See, why didn't they do that? Know? Like, why didn't Nintendo have a panel? Why didn't PlayStation have a panel? I think it's because they announce all their stuff at E3 and then they come to PAX and then they just show off what they have already, but we've already known about all of it. Well,
and like the thing is, like, I think about like the Emerald City Comic Con that we have out here. And I remember that Joe Quesada, who was the editor-in-chief at Marvel at the time, now he's like head of Marvel Studios or Marvel, you know, Comics or whatever. And he was answering questions, you know, the editor-in-chief of one of the biggest comic book companies in the world, one of two, right? You know, is answering. And like, I went up, I asked him a question, you know, and he's answering a question for me. You know, what? Why don't they have Nintendo? Why doesn't, you know, not necessarily Reggie, you know, needs to be there, but somebody who is like kind of higher up and can answer a question. Yeah, they're like, oh, who's this other Secret Smash character? Like, sorry, we can't tell you, or we'll announce at a later date. But there's questions like, hey, what goes into, you know, choosing a character for Smash? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you guys choose that? That'd be actually fascinating to know. Is it like, hey, we call the publisher up and we say, hey, can we use Sonic in there? Or do they call you? You know, does Sega say, hey, you can use Sonic, please put Sonic in this game?
I think,
you
know, for that specific scenario, probably that. Yeah, that right? is what happened. Yeah,
but like what instances happened there? Because, you know, there were people that were in that are in Smash Brothers that you're like, wow, why is Cloud in there from Final Fantasy VII, a game that's not on any Nintendo console, is in this game? How did that happen? You know, and then they can talk about that.
You should be a panel planner.
You know, I know,
that would
right?
Be a great, like, that would be a great panel.
Yeah,
I feel like when you go to Comic-Con, the panels are much more interesting and varied and eclectic, because you have people coming there from TV shows that you like, from movies that you like, and they're well-known celebrities. That's one of the other things that's missing from PAX, is the celebrity, the power of celebrity. Like, when you go to a Comic-Con, it's packed with celebrities. We got our notorious Sir Patrick Stewart photo together. By the way, for those who listen to the Cultcast regularly, you heard the story about Patrick Stewart. You saw the photo on my Twitter. The amazing Aaron Hughes was the person in the photo with me of the wax figurine. I mean, the real life person, Sir Patrick Stewart. And that's a whole other story. But when you go to Comic-Con, that's the kind of star power that you see there. You get celebrities of all kinds. And that's really cool. And then you go to panels and you have those celebrities talk about their histories, the shows that they're working on, the movies that they're involved in. I mean, an example I commonly talk about is when I saw Leonard Nimoy talk about his history with Star Trek. It was one of the most amazing oratory experiences I have ever had in my entire life. Like, life-changing.
And you only get that there. And like,
you only get that at Comic-Con.
That's not something that you're... Well, not even just Comic-Con, but in that specific location. You're not going to get that. Like, there's not a YouTube video. Maybe there's a crappy quality audio one. But, like, for the most part, this is something that you're going to get that's very unique for that space. Mm-hmm. And I feel that it would be good for PAX to do something like that. I don't know if anybody listens
but that's
or what,
the thing.
But,
I mean, who are the stars that play video games? There's only, like, maybe a few.
But it doesn't even have to be stars necessarily. Like, we know who made Gears of War, right? Cliff Bleszinski, mm-hmm. right? You know that name. You know John Romero. You know Shigeru Miyamoto. You know, there are certain names that you do know. Now, there are other names, right? Like, you know, you have Last of Us. And so there's, I believe it's, I want to say his name is Druckmann. I forgot the first name. But, you know, he's a very a prominent figure for The Last of Us, you know, and Uncharted. So if you have somebody that's in that type of space that can go there and discuss it and discuss making the game where, yeah, maybe there's a video you can see on YouTube about it, mm-hmm. but this would be something a little more intimate and something that where people could ask a question where you say, hey, why did you decide to do this in this sort of way? You know, mm-hmm. why did you decide to have this mission? What made this a more unique, what makes Last of Us better than Uncharted, you know, in certain ways? Like, why did you, you know, those are the things that'd be fascinating because then you get a very unique experience. And that's what I wish PAX would do. I wish that they would take a cue from Comic-Con and have these conversations that you can have in regards to these video games.
And it feels like they would be able to do that because unlike Comic-Con, there's only four PAXes, right, every mm-hmm. year. There's how many Comic-Cons all over the U.S.? There's probably, I would guess, probably 50. There's probably one in each state. And PAX is making a ton of money. They're selling 100,000 tickets at $50, $55 a pop plus fees. It seems like they would be able to, plus all the exhibitor fees, uh-huh. of course. So they're making a lot of money. It seems like they would have the money to pull in some of those big-time celebrities and have them, well, those big-time video game celebrities, I should say, and have them speak about their respective topics. That would actually make it so much cooler because the panels, I look at the panels every year and I try to go to things that are interesting and they have maybe two that might be interesting and the rest are things that I'm like, who goes to this? Who wants to see this topic live? Some of them are they have a lot of really odd ones mm-hmm. that seem to be so obscure.
Very, it's not just unique, but it's super targeted. And so the amount of people that would be interested in that is very few and far between.
Yeah.
And so it, like in a way, you kind of exclude then other groups. If you have a panel that's about The Legend of Zelda, you have everybody that's a fan of Legend of Zelda or it's heard of Legend of Zelda, right? So they're going to be interested in that panel, potentially. That doesn't mean that they're going to go, but that's a potential. When you have something that's very specific about only indie games and like indie games that are platformers, but, you know, do this one little thing. Well, I don't care about that. You know, like that's not something that's going to appeal to me. I'm not going to go to that panel. And a lot of other people aren't going to either.
They should get guys like Todd Howard from Bethesda to mm-hmm. come talk about Fallout 76. Absolutely. Do a Q&A. And engage with the audience on some of these big AAA titles. That's really what's missing. Not these like really, I was going to say small creators, but that's not what I want to say. Because some of the small creator panels are actually really interesting. But the topics that they have at the panels, like you said, are so niche that I look at them and I think, who would actually want to go sit through an hour of this? Mm-hmm. And so I don't go to any panels at all, which sucks because I like going to panels.
Well, and you mentioned Todd Howard, which that would be amazing because you can ask him questions about not just Fallout 76, but all the other ones. Oh, yeah. Why did you do this thing in Fallout 4? You know, like why, you know, the Fallout mobile game, what was the inspiration behind that? You know, things like that. And you can ask him those questions that are specific that he would probably know the answers to. Mm-hmm. Downside is 76 is coming out. He's probably incredibly busy. He was probably at the office like this weekend.
Yeah, he probably was. Still, that would be cool. I would love to hear him talk about, and even some of the other AAA game creators, what the process is like to go through and create like a new IP or how to be successful in the video game industry. Like a guy like Todd Howard, he probably has an incredible story. He's probably told it before. You could probably find it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But that would be a triple A keynote. You go in there and you have Todd Howard there talking about his history with Bethesda because he wanted to work at Bethesda before he was, I think before he was 18. And he tried to get a job there. They told him no. And then finally he got hired and he worked his way up through the ranks. And now he is, I don't know what his actual position is, but he's one of the most influential game creators who's ever lived, I think. I mean, he's worked on Fallout 4. He worked on Skyrim. He worked on Fallout 76. There's one that I'm missing. I can't remember the name of it. But lots of incredible AAA games, which, by the way, I heard someone say, I was listening to a podcast today. They were talking about game design, and they were wondering how much Fallout 4 made for Bethesda. And I don't know where they got their numbers from, but they were saying that that game probably cost them about $90 million to create, which is way lower than I would have expected. $90 million? That seems low for a game like that. They were working on it for 4 years.
You figure 4 years, if it's
maybe even longer,
a team of 100 people, you average out the salaries, let's say it's $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I mean, yeah, I mean, that'd be close. That'd be like breaking even if you like you made only $90 million, you know?
And I think it made for them. Now, this number might be wrong. Well, the number is probably correct, but the time frame might be incorrect. I think the podcast said they made $770 million in their first week. $770 million in their first week of sales. It was either the first week or their first month. Looking at me skeptically, like you don't believe that.
I mean, they have to sell over 10 million copies in a week.
I think it was something ridiculous. You know, like really big AAA games can make $1.52 billion.
Well, Grand Theft Auto, of course, has, but they have a lot of microtransactions in their games, and they've released on every like platform, like known to man.
But even if the time frame is wrong, it was at an astronomical amount of money. It was like close to $800 million in a very short period of time, and I was just like, "Geez, dude, that is a big profit margin."
Mm-hmm.
You know, just making games, and that is the power of Todd Howard. He is able to create games that people love. And I would like to know how he does that. How do you get to that point where you're creating these huge open world games that everyone wants to play? We're going on a tangent. We should probably wrap it up. Any final thoughts?
No.
I hope you come back next year.
I hope so too. You know,
Aaron's moving, so
yeah,
he's moving to another state. I won't tell you where because I don't want you to stalk him.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
This is kind of the end of an era for us. And it's going to be very sad going next year. I was trying to tell one of our other friends, Jesse. I was like, "Hey, Jesse, you should go with me next year." not the Jesse we both know. Yeah. Well, I guess we both know both Jessies.
Yeah.
The Jesse that was here today. And I need someone to go with. So hopefully you'll come back. Otherwise, it's just going to be me roaming around the halls of the Fortnite Mega Building next year, eating free hamburgers that are undercooked. And hanging out with the tweens in that building, of which there were many.
I can imagine.
That whole place was packed with kids.
That's the thing. I feel I'm starting to feel my age a little bit, you know? And I'm looking around, I'm like, man, you're like 10. You know, you're 16 and I'm twice your age.
Yeah, they're like 15-year-olds there, all bright and chipper. They're there with their dad
ready
to play Fortnite. And I'm like just trying to build a wall, and it takes them like a split second. I'm like doing it in like 10 seconds as I'm getting shot and killed. I'm trying to get better, but it's hard.
Yeah,
Learning to build while you're under fire is not easy, especially when you're not good at PC games.
Well, you know, I'm excited to come back and kind of see what they continue to do. It's a lot of fun. And you know what? I feel like you only really need to go one day. I think one day is totally enough. You know, we went on Saturday this year. We've gone in the past where we've gone multiple days and it's been fine. But, you know, realistically, I could go on a Friday, I could go on a Monday, and I think I'd get the same experience out of it. Maybe not as many people, but still would be fun.
I like the chaos. That's why I like going on Saturday. Even though you get to see less stuff, even though it's crazy, even though the traffic is terrible and everything is hard to access, I still just like being around all the people. But I am going to try and go back tomorrow, and I'm curious to see how busy it is. It is a holiday, so it might still be pretty busy, but
let me know. You know, who knows? Maybe I'll make my way
down
there.
Dude, I think you should try to go. Yeah, the last hurrah. We can go for like a few hours, maybe. Of course, it's tough because you got to buy a ticket for like a few hours, so it may not be worth it. Anyway, thanks everyone for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed this frank video game conversation of PAX 2018. This has been a conversation with the amazing and very attractive Aaron Hughes, if I do say so myself. My name is Aaron Elijah, and we'll see you guys next time.